Hey, hey, Podnutsians. Welcome to DDG, episode number 7. After almost 2 months, well, I promised you in the beginning that this could be utterly random, but I come to you with, I will say, an important message. Pun intended. There is a new documentary coming out, and I first want to preface it with this. I always try to say, support those who support you. And a lot of people might think I'm talking about you guys supporting me, and that's really not it. I really want everybody, including myself, to support everybody who supports them. I don't want to make it sound like, you know, perfect world kind of scenario, but we all have to do our part. Okay. One of the guys who supported me, who I can never truly pay back, is Steve Cherubino, the original owner, founder of Podnuts. I might be the owner, but I ain't the founder. And I think there's a difference between fathers and daddies. Steve is the father of Podnuts. It's his child. I am simply its daddy right now. I'm the owner right now. But Steve C. Hit me up a couple days ago, and he told me about this documentary called The Messengers. I did have early access to it, but I'll just tell you guys right now. Podcasting is very important to people like me, not because I'm a podcaster, but because I subscribe to over 100 podcasts. Granted, I haven't went back and curated them anytime recently, so maybe 70 of them are active is what I'll say. Podcasts have became to me a instantaneous mechanism to hear topics, people, opinions, facts, entertainment, fiction, whatever I want to listen to, whenever I want to listen to, however I want to listen to. We haven't had this type of ubiquitous access to podcasts, to information, like we do now. Now, we are on the inside. We who subscribe to podcasts, we who create podcasts, we who share podcasts that we like, are right now the special people. We are the people that know about this. We are the people that understand this. We are the people that enjoy this. Well, this documentary is basically trying to share that message to a broader audience. I do picture a day when podcasts become a normal word that everyone uses. Even if the term changes, we're going to always, I think in the future, have an idea of what it means to do serialized content, audio, video, text, whatever. But podcasts, I think, are only going to become more prevalent, more popular as time goes on. And via this documentary, things like this are going to help it along. Steve C. Helped the backer, the creator, the guy who had in his mind to do this documentary. Steve was one of the guys that got him kickstarted. Steve considers him a friend. Anybody that Steve C. considers a friend, I consider a friend. I've never met, you know, anybody in this documentary except for Steve C. Steve C's only in it maybe, I don't know, 30, 40 seconds total. But I can tell you guys right now, I'm not one of the guys that watches movies and gets teary-eyed. But there was at least one part where the horse guy almost had me in tears, period. Because there's a lot of truths that were said in this documentary. And I'm going to give you guys a little, like, example of what I would have said if I was in this documentary. One of the things they ask is, like, what does podcast mean to you? I've actually thought about this a lot. And if I was to give a elevator pitch, because there's three kinds of pitches you can do, the elevator pitch would be, a podcast is passion. It doesn't matter what you're talking about. It's passion. You can be talking about the NFL, and whoever's talking about it is passionate about it. You can be talking about fixing computers, and you can be passionate about it. You can be talking about owning pets. You can be passionate about it. You can talk about making music. Odds are, if you're talking about on a podcast, you're passionate about it. So when I think podcast, I think passion. Now, I'm sure there are some podcasts out there that don't take their podcast that seriously to, you know, dictate, I have to be passionate about this, but a huge percentage of them do. Podcast is a unique mechanism to bypass everything. Even though everybody who does a podcast puts their podcast on iTunes because it's the way it was, it's the way it is, and for all we know for now, for the future, it's the way it's going to be. One of the guys from Libsyn put it very, very succinctly. Even if you don't like Apple, I despise Apple. Even if you don't like the idea of Apple controlling that mechanism, a lot of the podcast aggregators out there and the podcast players scrape the iTunes public feed to get their content, which is true. I've seen it. I've witnessed it. I've purposely put out a couple podcasts and their first 5 or 10 episodes not put it on iTunes, and I watch the numbers, and then I add it to iTunes, and I see an immediate difference in the download numbers. So the truth is, you have to be there on iTunes. It's just one of those things. I love podcasts for one reason. I think of podcasts also as therapy. They're self-therapy for myself. Everyone's going to have a different answer to it. Like if you try to ask someone to describe a smell, they're all going to have different answers. Podcasts for me is almost like self-therapy. For those of you that don't know, before I started podcasting, almost 10 years ago now, I was a shut-in. I was a hermit. I did everything in my power every day to talk to as few people as possible because of my speech impediment. And those who have good ears will hear me once in a while stutter or hesitate or get stuck on a word, because it happens still. But what I learned through podcasting is, at least for me, my speech impediment was 90%+ mental. The old adage is the only person holding you back from your dreams is yourself holds unbelievable quantities of truth, is what I'm going to say. Unbelievable quantities of truth as far as I see reality. Thus, podcasting to me is a constant ongoing reminder that I can do stuff. All I got to do is do it. Yes, failure is an option, because everybody fails at something, and you always learn from failures and you move forward and you get better. And also, when I say hello, pod nutsians in the beginning of the episode, it's not me speaking down to you guys. I don't think of you guys as listeners. I honestly think of all you guys as friends. My doors, man, pun intended again, I guess. My doors are always open. And that's one of the things that they mention in this documentary, that you have to communicate with people who are listening to your shows. And I agree, absurdly, because I'm not here for myself. I personally like to believe I am a very selfless person, not a selfish person, but a very selfless person. I get enjoyment out of communicating with people and helping them and them helping me. This is, to me, very clearly a two-way street. This is not a one-way street. This is not like back in the day being on TV, speaking to the camera, and then going home and doing your thing. I don't put on an act. I don't put on a show. I'm not here to do some character for you, even though that's one of the podcast ideas I did have, tangent. I've been for months and months and months and months and months thinking about doing a podcast where I don't want to say I do voices or characters, but I do things that aren't me. Part of the logic is behind that. I do believe when I do voices or caricatures, that I do stutter less. I do have less speech impediments. I can tell you when I was young, like young, I did notice I stuttered less when I did impersonations. I remember seeing Rich Little, and for the youngsters out there, Rich Little was the best impressionist of all times. And to call him a impressionist, I think he actually takes as an insult, because what he does is he like mimics people to a T. Their movements, their little twitches, their voices, their mannerisms, their phrasings. It's really difficult to tell, if you close your eyes, especially, and you listen to him, and then you listen to that real person, which one's which. He's that damn good. And I do believe when I used to do voices, and to my kids, of course, I still do voices, I think I stutter less. So one of my ideas was to do a podcast, and here's one of the examples I was thinking of. I basically spend all year putting together content, 15, 20-minute increments, and it would all be horror-based or Halloween-based kind of thing. And then basically, like the month before Halloween, every day I release one of those episodes. And that's the kind of ideas. The beauty, I'll say, to owning your own podcast network is at any point in time, you can just easily spin up another show, another series of shows. It's one of those things that you have to use restraint and not kind of go overboard. Once in a while, I do release what I think is too many shows where I really have very little time for myself. Hence, this show has not been published in 2 months because I literally haven't had that much time to do it. Again, I'll say I despise Apple Computers as a company. I literally despise them as a company. I think they're an example of one of the things that are wrong with this country. You have one company making too much money instead of other companies being able to easily rise up, and trademark, patent law, and all this kind of thing helps them stay at the top of where they're at. With that said, I went on to iTunes and I pre-ordered this documentary. One, because Steve C. asked me to. And Steve C. Doesn't know this. He could ask me nearly anything and I would do it because he has helped me that much. And I'm asking everyone out there, if you can afford $4.99, because that's all it costs to pre-order, I'm begging everyone to go and pre-order this. Now, it's only available on iTunes for a reason. iTunes are, number one, the home of podcasts. Love it, hate it, it's the truth. Sorry, it's the truth. Number two, if they had pre-orders available at multiple sites, multiple URLs, multiple systems, multiple organizations, then their pre-order numbers wouldn't look as good. I learned about this maybe 2 or 3 years ago. I want to say it was Penn Jillette who went on a rampage about this. And then I started looking around and asking around. I found it to be very true. One pre-order a month, a week, whatever, before any product gets launched is worth more than 100 sales 2 days after it gets on sale. It's just, that's the truth. Pre-orders are unbelievably helpful. You can never go back in time and pre-order something. It means a lot to everyone else when they see high pre-order numbers. Right now on iTunes, I believe this is all the way up to maybe number 2 on the pre-order listings. And this is not arrogance or cocky, but I would love to be a part of the group of people who make that number 1. I honestly believe this documentary has a base message that really does need to be heard by a lot of people. It needs to have more publicity. It needs to be talked about more. So I'm really begging everyone, if you don't have iTunes installed or you don't have a Windows or Mac, talk to a friend who does and ask them, can I order this on your computer? Can I order this on your phone? Can I order this on your laptop? And at the same time, communicate with them what it is, why it is. And, you know, we as a community, podcast community, the producers and the listeners need to support this. I'm begging people, go pre-order. At the same token, share it in your Twitter feed, share it in your Facebook feed. I'm not one to ask you relentlessly to go to a URL, do this, but you need to share this and send a link of this into your favorite podcasting show. Tell them it exists. Ask them to support it. A huge majority of podcasters in this documentary are not celebrities first and then podcasters. That was one of the things that made me so happy when I watched this. A huge majority of the people in this documentary are podcasters first. And I don't love big Hollywood stars coming into doing podcasts because, you know, we were here first. Show us some respect. But it's inevitable. Big stars are going to come into it. But I think the people who started out as podcasters have a more important message to share. And this documentary, I think, does a fantastic job of conveying that message. So I'm asking everyone, share this with the other podcasts that you listen to. Share this on any kind of social media that you see fit. Pre-order it whenever possible. Again, it's only like $4.99 to pre-order. $4.99 to pre-order. $4.99, that's nothing. We all, basically that I know of, all my friends and most of my family can afford this without batting an eye. You know, most people go into Starbucks and buy a, you know, $5 caramel mocha frappuccino latte drink kind of thing. Just one day, don't get that drink. Fill up a bottle of water at your house or make coffee at your house and then pre-order this documentary. To me, it's that important. I will say that again. To me, it is that important. And I'll say this. I've been doing podcasts for 8 years. It means a lot to me. I don't see myself ever stopping doing podcasts. I will say I still don't think I have the right amount of self-confidence. I still have a little bit of a hard time by myself hitting record and talking. I still think having other people to talk with, I think, makes it better listening for people at the end. And that's just one of, I think, the self-confidence things that I am either going to have to get over or just learn to live with. Because one of the bad things about podcasts, and that's one of the things that they don't get into, most of the people that they interview either do one-man shows or one-man show and interview somebody or two-man shows. It doesn't seem like they had a lot of multi-host shows. One of the hardest things to do in podcasting is not podcasting. It is scheduling time for everyone to be on, which is why a show like The Makers, to me, is amazing. We have seven frigging people on that show. And most shows, we have everybody show up. To have a group of people that dedicated to cut that time out, that exact time, every single week, is nearly amazing to me. And I understand why most podcasters don't do that, because it's too difficult. It's too hard to find people reliable enough. Well, we're pod nuts. We're different. Okay. One of the things said, like, shoot for the niche, whatever. And they have the most dedicated listenership. Well, I don't like using the word listenership or listeners. They have the most positive communities behind them, and I utterly agree. The niche is great, which is why this show to me isn't a niche, and I really do worry about how much downloads it's going to have. But time will play out and we'll see how good it will be. But when you can find a group of people that dedicated, there's no chance of it not being a success. The Makers, I firmly believe, is going to just keep growing incredibly fast, simply because the amount of people who are willing to come out and be on the show and give all the information up that they do is hard to duplicate, hard to replicate by any single person or any two people podcast. You know, and the other shows on the network like that are the Podnuts Weekly Show. Sometimes they have 5-6 people on at a time. And to have that many people on one show is a clear indicator to everybody listening. This is a good time. This is fun. This is enjoyable. And everybody is teaching and learning at the same time. I really don't believe in making entertainment shows or shows strictly for entertainment. I truly believe every podcast needs to have a purpose, whether it be sharing news, sharing information, learning from the community, or educating them. I think is really more, I don't want to use the word important or vital or necessary, but it seems like to me that is my motive for doing podcasts. And if someone disagrees, it doesn't mean they're wrong. It just means that's how they see it. Podcasting is whatever you want it to be, you know, cause like back in the early days of TV, there was only certain types of content. And then as TV grew and aged and got more mature, you started to see a lot of specialized content where there was variety shows, news broadcast, interview shows, sitcoms, kids shows, where they kept getting more and more of a niche. And that's what podcasting is, except the opposite. Podcasts to me seem to start out as an utter niche. Now, when we get more and more listeners, I think the more vague a podcast is, the more possible of getting a large listenership. But to have people truly engaged, there needs to be that connection, that mutual understanding. And when you talk about niches and you talk about personal experiences, that's what people connect with. That's what I connect with when I listen to shows. I can tell you that. So I'm really asking everybody, do what you can to share. Support those who support you. If you get any enjoyment from any Podnuts show at all in the history of Podnuts, I'm asking you to take $4.99. Follow the link in the notes or just go to iTunes and look up The Messengers, a podcast documentary. It has a black and white logo of a mic and sound waves, and support those who support you. Spend the $4.99. I honestly don't even care if you even watch it. Voting with your dollar is one of the most important things we can do in this capitalist country, I'm going to say. And I try to be very careful where I put my money at. I try to be utterly careful with where I put my money and when I put my money. There are certain companies I really don't like to support unless I have to. And then there's certain companies I'll go out of my way to support because I know what they're doing is for the greater good, great customer service, treat their people great, have a great reputation, or they have a great product, one or a combination of those things. Now a quick transition. I will say I did record a little piece outside of my oldest son's doctor's office. I'm going to attach that here. So let's give that a go. Hey, Podnutsians. Door-to-door geek here. Going to try a little bit of a mobile recording. This is going to be a health-based podcast, is what I'm going to say. A lot of stuff really going on here. I'll say in the last 6 weeks, I actually tallied it up. I did take a one-week vacation where the family went down to Disney, but I calculated it out. Out of the last 6 weeks, I've been off 2.5 days a week on average for the last 6 weeks total. Only the week and one extra day was vacation or personal time I took off. All the rest was sick for doctor's appointments. And honestly, the place I work at, I've been there 20 years. I get a lot of leave, and without having that amount of leave, there's no way I think I could as comfortably of taking care of myself and my family with all this doctor's appointments and stuff. Granted, some of it was like dentist appointments for the kids and stuff like that. But in short, I've been diagnosed with at least being a pre-diabetic. My grandfather had diabetes. My father had diabetes. I'm pretty sure every forefather of mine has had diabetes, kind of thing. It was one of those things as a youth, I kind of knew it was there. I kind of thought it was like fate. I don't believe in fate whatsoever, but I kind of believed it was like fate. It was inevitable. It was going to happen. So I was very nonchalant about what I ate. I didn't really give it a whole lot of thought, I'll say. Nor did I look at, vitamins, nutrition, calories, carbs, or anything else. But honestly, thanks to the power of the interweb or the information superhighway, I was able to quickly find out at least some basic facts about diabetes. And yes, medical stuff is constantly changing. It's always being revised. That's the basis of science. What I found and what I'm doing is a staple of my behavioral change is sugars, bad. Carbohydrates, bad. For the layman, there's really only like one type of sugar that your body can digest. All other types of sugar are basically converted into that one type of sugar and then used, consumed, or put into other mediums of storage. Carbohydrates are literally nothing else than more complex sugars.
Even though they don't taste sweet, carbohydrates are sugars. They're just more complex. And starches, carbohydrates, kind of the same thing in my vague knowledge of it, are something else that I don't want to say completely avoiding, but I'm really avoiding. The easy gist of it is, you know, kind of like in The Simpsons when Homer Simpson took the piece of fried food and the doctor told him, Dr. Nick told him, if you rub this against a piece of paper and it turns invisible, it's your window to weight gain. Well, I kind of take that theory of if it's white, be apprehensive and don't eat it, which means I cannot eat any pasta. I cannot eat any breads, nor can I eat any rice whatsoever, bar none. That's my rule. Now, of course, I might have a soup with maybe a total of like 30 carbs with a potato, with a couple potatoes in it. But literally, that's like once a week kind of treat that I give myself. So my real goal is to have as close to 0 grams of sugar every single day and 0 grams of carbs every single day. In actuality, what I actually hit by the end of most days are anywhere from 2 to 3 grams of sugar, and on the low end, 20-ish carbs, on the high end, 50 or 60 carbs. So since I was diagnosed pre-diabetic, the end of March, right after I went up to Cambridge, Massachusetts to a Nerd Fest, Nerd Fightery, to hang out with some fellas. My AC1, I believe, is the test it's called, scored above 10, was like 10.6, which I've learned is basically at the number where they really heavily consider you need to take insulin shots. But because it was the first test, the doctor said, okay, now I'm going to ask you to come back in around 30 days. And it was around 20-something days later. Let's do another AC1 test. The goal of the AC1 is to be below, I believe, 6 or 6.5. And when I came back, my score was like 7.1. So the doctor was very happy. In 30 days, I lost like 15 pounds, 17 pounds, something like that. So he was also very happy with that. On my high side, I was over 250. So I've basically just been maintaining that diet. Now, the good thing about the diet, because, you know, there's good and bad to everything. The good thing about the diet is I can have just about as much bacon that I desire, eggs that I want, and cheese that I crave. And, you know, pork rinds are one of those surprisingly crunchy, whitish things that literally have zero sugar, zero carbs. So there are certain things I can, I don't want to say indulge in, because I'm also just trying to lower the amount of food that I'm eating as well. So I am definitely enjoying myself. I've also found beef jerky with zero sugar, zero carbs, which is not easy to find. And it tastes good. It's a little bit tougher than your average jerky, and what I'm guessing is the sugar basically gives it like moisture, so it's more flexible. So it's a slightly harder beef jerky, but tastes really, really good. And also, thanks to the internet and my mobile phone and the computer in my pocket, aka Information Superhighway, I'm able to go out to eat, which we do typically maybe once or twice a week. Actually, once because a family member, my father-in-law, my father, my mother-in-law, and every now and then my father-in-law, take us out to eat as a family to, you know, see the kids, talk to the kids, and they always insist they pay. I always try to return the favor with them at least every 2 or 3 weeks, and sometimes I get away with paying and sometimes I don't. So we go out sometimes twice a week, but because of my mobile phone, I'm able to immediately search and look up a restaurant menu, or MyFitnessPal.com, I believe, is another website that I've been really finding helpful. So I can immediately look at, like, TGI Fridays appetizer fried green beans and see how much carbs they have and how much sugars they have. So I've been able to really do really good. It's been now, we are in July, so the end of March, all of April, May, and June, so about 3 months. I've lost almost 30 pounds, and I'm maintaining, I think, good. I don't feel nauseous anymore. I don't feel queasy. I felt a bit dizzy. Now my blood pressure is dropping to the point where I'm getting ready to ask my doctor, can I stop taking my blood pressure med? Because like two out of the last three times I went, he asked me to chug a Gatorade on the way out, kind of thing. Because Gatorade's higher in salt, more salt is higher blood pressure. There's direct correlation between that. I'm feeling better. I'm extremely restricted in my diet as far as my family's concerned. I still cook meals for the wife. I still cook with potatoes. I still cook with rice. I still cook with pasta. And I feed my family with it. I don't eat it. I'm perfectly fine with opening up a can of tuna fish and eating it or something small like that, which I know makes me even more weird, but hey, we all have our quirks. My son, on the other hand, he was diagnosed with I don't want to say super rare affliction, but it's definitely kind of rare. Autoimmune condition. I don't like calling it autoimmune disease because to me, disease implies curable, treatable kind of thing. Autoimmune condition, which if you don't know, the gist of it is there is no cure for any autoimmune disease. And at least all of them that I looked up, doctors literally have no idea how they get started, what triggers them to happen. It's basically a condition where my son's internal cells, some are fighting themselves, they're fighting other friendly cells in the body. The condition he has is called juvenile dermatomyositis. I might have added an extra syllable in there, but that's basically what it is. It's in his joints, so it's a rheumatological condition because it's in his joints. There's only four people in the state of Maryland who are classified to be able to treat juvenile rheumatological conditions, and I can't believe I nailed that term there, but I did. The lady we found, Dr. Melissa Hawkins Holt, is maybe the nicest doctor I ever met, but also has an uncanny ability to speak very frank, honest, and kind at the same time. And she's really impressed at the questions my son is asking and how he's communicating with her. So he's been on a small myriad cocktail of medications, from prednisone, which is a steroid, to a couple other things. And now he's getting infusions of medication, which is like a dialysis type room where he's in, where he's getting like a slow drip of meds. He's gotten two so far. Her blunt goal is, I want him to be completely symptom-free, and we need to get him off steroids. Steroids long-term bad. Period. All kinds of things can happen to it besides weight gain, aggravation, anger issues kind of things. And my son's entering puberty. You know, a pill that can help make him angry and entering puberty is not a good combination. But he's been unbelievably adult, civil, respectable, which, you know, I can't speak how happy that makes me. But he's also been unbelievably positive and upbeat about this whole thing. Right now I'm outside of the place where he's getting a 6-hour infusion. He passed out in a chair, so I came outside to do this real quick. He literally woke up at 5 o'clock and said something to the effect of, I couldn't wait to come back here, which I thought he would dread. I thought he would despise. And I try my best to not impose any of my ideals or ideas onto him. I want him to come to his own stuff. And I really try to hide my feelings about a lot of stuff, whether it be religion, politics, sexual orientation, blah, 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 other 150 million things. But this as well. And when I said, you know, why are you excited to come back here? He said, well, it didn't really hurt. I was able to take a nap. I could play on my phone. The medicine seemed to really help because I'm not itchy anymore. And all my bumps, as he calls them, are, you know, getting less and less. And he said, the ladies there are really nice. And they gave me a cookie. So I, you know, high five, super high five, double high five, extended high five kind of thing. You know, fantastic. And then my youngest son, I was warned basically by a doctor when he was, I think, 3. Be careful where you take him. No, he was 5. she basically insinuated, be careful where you take him, be careful who diagnoses him, and if anyone says autism or ADHD, fight it. She said, every kid is on the spectrum to some degree. That's what the word spectrum kind of like entails. To not be on the spectrum means you're on the spectrum to something else, is what she said. She said, so every kid has symptoms. I think your kid is perfectly fine. In fact, he reminds me a lot of my kid. Don't put him on medications unless you really feel like there's nothing else that can be done. Blah, 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 blah. 2-3 years later now, my youngest son is definitely better. But every 2 weeks, he goes to a behavioral therapist. Unbelievably, again, kind and very woman who knows how to communicate really well with kids. And she's new to this field. I can tell she's so young. She might be 25, 26 is what I'm guessing. But I think she's really helping him. Not to mention my son is smitten over her. You know, he definitely enjoys her company kind of thing. And he enjoys staring at her. But he cannot sit still just like me right now. My legs will not stop moving. He cannot sit still in school. He's definitely had issues. He's been suspended. I mean, suspended. In third grade, he was suspended like 4 times. But he's definitely doing better. So it's seeing things on all fronts. I mean, my wife, God bless her. She has no health issues. And, you know, if luck was real, I would like be knocking on wood right now, you know, hoping, wishing, and praying that nothing happens to her. But she's doing really good. So, you know, we're just sustaining, surviving. There's a word for this, too, and I can't remember what it is. I just listened to, like, a How Stuff Works episode, I believe, that went through this. And I can't remember the word. I'm sorry. But these are the kind of things that my wife cannot believe I don't get down about. I don't, like, dwell on. I don't get upset about. Because there's nothing I can do about it. If there's something that's completely outside my control, I'm not going to let it ruin me. I'm not going to let it control me. I'm not going to let it sit on my mind. We're going to work past it. We're going to work with it. And we're going to still do whatever we need to do as human beings. I have like constant communication, sit-down talks with my youngest son about how to behave, why to behave, what to do, what not to do, why to do it, why not to do it kind of thing. And I constantly have talks about my son, where I literally just sit down sometimes and say, what's on your mind? Is there a question you want to ask me? And we talk about all kinds of things, whether it be why this video game does this, or why do people lie kind of thing. And I try, I'm going to repeat again, I try my best to not push my ideals on him. Most of the time when he asks a question, I return back with the question to him. Like, what would you expect the answer to be? How do you expect the answer to be? And then after I get, you know, 3-4 minutes into him, then I say, well, here's kind of what I think. And I make it very clear, this is what I think, son. This is not the truth. This is the way I see it. This is what I believe the case to be. But I always try to make sure that he understands. And when it is a fact, or I believe it's a fact, because let's be real, I literally say to him, this is the way I see it, and it seems like a fact to me. Or this is what people believe the fact is. And I always try to push him to question things and keep challenging everything. So I haven't had a lot of time to do a lot of podcast, because when I'm off work, I'm actually 10 times busier than when I go to work. And I've been off work so much recently, it's been really hard to do podcast. I can't thank everybody enough. Whether it be Jeff Hallish for pumping those episodes out, whether it be Marvin B for picking up on other people's slack and putting out extra episodes, or whether it be Tracy Holtz, Bruce Patterson, Jonathan Adu, Mark Cockrell, Eric Ardini, Liam, Chad, Brett, I mean, the 85 other people, and the guys who support me, whether it be Knucklehead Tech or Charles in the Mattermost server, or Highlander, or any of the other guys in IRC, or even Chad Wallenberg, who once in a while will just hang out, message me, and we video chat for a while, like a psychiatrist appointment kind of thing. All of the support that I got is literally mind-bending. And you knew this next word was coming. But the support I've gotten from patreon.com/podnuts where it's a whole network campaign to try to make up for lost revenue has been very underwhelming. It's right now stands at, and I did the recalculations, I actually sat down and did the math, unique IP addresses of people that download all the content each month, which is an extremely low conservative number versus every other statistical measurement tool that's out there. I'll say that. Unbelievably low, like 10 times less than so many other tools out there. I'm still only getting about a 0.03 amount of the listenership supporting us on patreon.com/podnuts for a $1 a month donation. What I will say is that what I don't understand, but I'm not going to argue with it because I'd be a fool, is I have some of the hosts on the network giving me money, and I have some of the hosts on the network giving me $10 a month. And that's mind-blowing. It's mind-numbing. It's extremely appreciative, but I'm trying to help them out. I mean, I feel like I owe them. And then they turn around and do this. So I don't know how I can do enough to feel like I'm on the positive side of that equation. I owe everybody on the network more than I could ever repay them is my logic. And I'd really appreciate if people out there could either support the network that way or support the network by helping us get more listeners or even just sending feedback. Feedback is unbelievably positive for all the shows. It is a cascading effect, and I've witnessed it before. The more feedback we get on the show, the more feedback it drives other people to do because people feel more comfortable sending feedback because they hear so much feedback. And a lot of the shows, I will say, I don't think we're getting close to enough feedback. I'm going to stop the show out show for now, and I'm going to try to go home and record the final parts of it.
Okay, back in the studio. I'm going to end this podcast with another recommendation. I'm going to recommend the Carson podcast over at carsonpodcast.com. The host of this show is a guy named Mark who had a job or two, I'm going to say, in the entertainment field on late night talk shows and in Hollywood in general. And the entire podcast is essentially him going back in time, him finding as many people as he can who were affiliated, connected with, or gained popularity via The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. I'm not even sure what episode he is up to, but it has to be at least 50, if not more. The only way I can put it is there's few people in my life that I was able to connect with when I was young. It looks like 130 episodes. And they were late night talk show hosts, Johnny Carson and then David Letterman. And one of the reasons I think I was able to connect with Johnny Carson at a young age when I watched him was I truly believed when I was young that respect and class meant something. And when I looked at Johnny Carson, to me, he was the epitome of class. He always came out, looked sharp. He always treated his guest, especially the normal people guest, like they were important, and he was there solely to talk to them. And then when he had big stars on, he basically treated them like normal people too. So listening to that show is like a flashback. I'm hearing about some of the episodes that I've seen, some of the things that I witnessed, and I'm hearing even more about a normal guy, a guy who had genuine problems in his life. But when the time came, he flicked the switch and he became the most professional guy maybe to have ever been on TV, doing a job at late night TV that no one before him did better. And a lot will say, and I will say, nobody since has done as good of a job. Johnny Carson was late night. Millions of people every night went to bed watching him. He was the last thing they saw before they went to sleep. We're never going to have that again because back when he did it, there was essentially three channels or four channels for the majority of his broadcasting career. Now we have everything: podcast, YouTube, Hulu, Netflix, 200 plus stations on our TV. So it's really hard to get that kind of dedicated watcher, and he did it. And most importantly, he deserved it. Mark does a fantastic job of talking to these people, asking the right questions. I'm not one who likes interview shows whatsoever in any shape, way, or form. One of the reasons I like this podcast is Mark is, first and foremost, a normal person. When he communicates, everything he says, you can understand, you can feel, you can comprehend him like you're sitting in the room with him at that time. I don't think he realizes how good he is at doing this podcasting thing. But he, to me, is in the top five podcast hosts I've ever listened to. I think he just does a fantastic job. He literally travels all over the U.S., finding these people, scheduling time with them, fighting through sometimes publicists and managers and everyone to get through these people, to sit down and talk with them. And most of the people, it's very obvious, are utterly genuine about their feelings about Johnny Carson, their feeling about how Hollywood was back in the day, the feelings of everyone that they interacted with, and like how it was, what it meant to be on that show. If you at all remember The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, I highly encourage you to check out carsonpodcast.com. Give it a listen, give it a go. Go back, listen to episode one if you want. Some of the most, I haven't listened to all of them yet. I've listened to a whole bunch. Some of the better shows, I'll say, is like Stephen Wright. When he talked to him, you knew it. You felt it. You know, you were there with him. You know, some of the more popular names that if you go back and look at all the people he's talked to are, I think, awkwardly enough, some of the most genuine people, where they don't have to be. And they talk very frankly about everything that happened, including one of the comedians I wasn't really a fan of, Brett Butler, was fantastic. That show was amazing, is what I'm going to say. Just great stuff. Good podcast. Give it a listen. Let me know what you think. Again, feedback is utterly important to everything we do as podcasters. So always send feedback to at least one show a week is all I ask. And by that, I don't mean one show on Podnuts. I mean one show that you listen to. If I can get a little bit more feedback on this show, it will encourage me to do more shows. I will say that. And I don't care if the email is nothing more than trivia questions that I have to try to answer. You know, I'll read anything because, you know, that's what I'm supposed to be doing here. I want to thank everyone for their support. Thank everyone for downloading. Thank everyone for subscribing. Thanks everyone for spreading the word. And everybody who pre-orders the messengers, thank you, thank you, thank you very much. And I hope to talk to you again real soon.
Hey friends, this is Eric Hardini, the manager. I can tell that you like podcasts and learning about technology. One of the fastest growing areas of tech is currently small, low energy consumption computing. Come join us on the Mini PC Show, where we discuss all the new small form factor devices. The Mini PC Show, big talk, little machines.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.